present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Holt.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with an advertisement from The Times, read by Brian Perkins.
Queen's College, Harley Street. The annual summer party will be held at the college on Wednesday. All old queens are welcome.
Thank you, Antonia Garden, for sending that. Now let's meet the teams. Welcome first, please, on my right, Andy Hamilton and David Aronovich. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Tony Hawkes. And before we start round one, here's a cutting that was sent in by Brian Copping from Worthing.
Elderly gent, own home and car, non-smoker, seeks younger lady who can drive for mutual help, outings, etc. No dogs.
Thank you, Mr. Copping. Andy, welcome back to this series of the news quiz. Who took the rise out of his ministers?
Oh, yeah, well, this is Tony Blair, who sat down at a cabinet meeting. Actually, apparently he doesn't call them cabinet meetings. They're group hugs. And he sat down and he told them that he was going to forego his £40,000 pay rise, I think. And then I think it was left up to them whether they would like to forego their £16,000 pay rise. And they were told that John Prescott would give them a bell later on and see if they'd made up their minds. And surprisingly enough, a lot of them have decided that maybe they'll just pass on their pay rise this year.
Tony Blair's decision is seen as an important gesture. It proves he does know how the other half lives. She's an extremely well-paid barrister on a six-figure income. The cabinet quickly followed suit. They insisted they'd not been put under any pressure at all. Mr. Blair merely phoned them and told them how much he was looking forward to the next cabinet reshuffle. 2 points to Andy. David, welcome back to you. Whose economical truth is to follow GB's GB?
Oh, blimey. I haven't the faint... I can't get inside this. It's one of those questions for crossword artists, isn't it? But Andy knows.
No.
Concentrate on the initials. To follow GB's GB. Finally.
Well, I suppose it's Gordon Brown.
Yes.
And I suppose it's Great Britain.
Yes.
And I suppose Gordon Brown is lying in his teeth.
No, he is an economical minister, isn't he?
I know
that. Economics minister.
Yes. What more do you want?
Oh, God. Right.
Can I just say...
Tony, your question.
Tell us, Simon.
Tell us, Simon.
Put us into our misery.
The International Monetary Fund told the rest of Europe they should copy the British economic policy. Since Mr. Brown took over at number 11, UK economic figures have improved beyond measure, but this was put down to a statistical freak under a previous administration. The statistical freak was known as Ken. So I'll give 1 point to Alan and Tony, and give Tony his question. Which holy shortlist caused an unholy row?
Tony Blair. There was a report earlier this week that he hadn't accepted the two nominees that the Church's General Synod had put forward for the Bishop of Liverpool. Goodness knows why. I don't see what he's got against Carla Lane and Derek Hatton. But the two names that were on this list, this General Synod's list, they're a secret. No one knows what they are. I was just rather hoping that they might be called Gerald and Leonard, because General Synod is actually an anagram of Sod, Jerry and Len. Which is, in effect, what are you saying to them, really, isn't it?
Tony Blair's refusal to accept either of the Church of England's two nominees as the new Bishop of Liverpool. There hasn't been such a fuss about the appointment of bishop since Margaret Thatcher twice refused to endorse the Church's preferred candidate. She reasoned that in an ideal world, bishops would be appointed by God, and so she was quite within her powers. So, 2 points to Tony, and Alan, your piece of music.
Darling, you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Alan, who didn't seem sure whether to go to assembly.
Ah, this is the Welsh.
Very good.
who have almost certainly voted one way or the other. There's been voting, and the Welsh are have will. They have voted. The Welsh have voted, and one way or the other, everything is going to be not too different and fairly similar to the way it was, unless it's remarkably changed. They're going to put a few Welsh people in a hut, and they're going to be able to say what they want for tea and things like that. I believe they have lava bread and Shirley Bassey. I don't know much else. But the Welsh, they probably voted for both of those.
Tony Blair was very keen that the Welsh should have their own parliament, albeit one that can't actually make any policies or decisions. Old habits die hard. William Hague was out campaigning for the no vote, and during his many walkabouts with Fionn, picked up a handful of useful Welsh phrases, including, who's that bald git, William who, and she's his what? The scores at the end of round one are dramatically Andy and David with 2, but Alan and Tony in the lead with 5 points. We start round two with an item taken from the minutes of a parish council meeting in Berkshire.
The clerk drew attention to the need for everyone to distinguish clearly between himself, Paul Everett, clerk of Horton Parish Council, and Martin Everett, borough engineering manager responsible for sewerage and drainage work, so that all types of council motions could be clearly distinguished.
Thanks to the anonymous sender of that clipping. Andy, everything to play for here, I think. How did revolting news types become newsworthy types?
Right, well, this is because there is a restructuring in progress at the BBC, because, let's face it, they do need one. They haven't had one for at least, must be 3 hours now. And John Burt has decided that rather than have specific programmes which have specific editors in the news department, you'll have sort of super editors, as they're called, who will have responsibility for many programmes like, you know, Panorama, Newsnight, Antiques Roadshow, and the staff, the great and the good at BBC News, and I don't know if this includes Brian, he's probably sworn to silence, have said that they don't like it. I think the root of the problem here is that John Burt is secretly addicted to restructuring. In fact, I did hear some gossip the other day, which is that he's barred from using the underground, because apparently every time he gets on the district line, he tries to move all the stations around.
It's one of those funny situations, isn't it, where everybody's right, you see. I mean, Tony Hall, who is the head of News and Current Affairs and who also employs me for a number of things, he's got a good point, hasn't he, really, what he wants to do. And these programme editors, who also quite often use me on their programmes, I mean, they've got quite a good point, too, in not wanting to...
It occurs to me the only thing unstructured about John Burt is his suit. Isn't that strange? It's that Armani thing he wears. It looks like it's still on the hook. And I am not yet off it. Perkins has said not a word. The pensionable Perkins is hanging on by his teeth.
They're the only ones I've got.
Brian would be in there Monday morning. I was against it, John. I tried to... Honestly,
the story concerned newscasters who revolted against BBC plans to rationalise all their programmes under the same editorship. One described the move as a disaster that would split the BBC asunder, spelling the end of serious, vital broadcast news, and he'd have more to say after the cricket results. BBC chiefs seemed unimpressed by their staff. After all, most newsreaders only sit about all day with but a few minutes' work every hour and then just read out their lines parrot fashion. What's your comment on that, Brian?
Pretty Polly.
So 2 points there. And David, whose Irish eyes have all kinds of everything to smile about?
Oh, thank God I know the answer to this. And this is, that, incidentally, also is the favourite phrase of one of the candidates of the Irish election, who is a woman called Rosemary Scallon, who is most noted for the fact that she won the Eurovision Song Contest for Ireland back in 1903. And she's standing as the sort of countryside candidate, isn't she, for church and country and all this kind of stuff, although she actually lives in Arkansas in America. So which country and which church she's actually standing for is a kind of moot point. But Dan is one of the candidates, but all the candidates are women. So to balance it off, we have only men on the news quiz, if you notice. This is a protest against what's happening in Ireland.
It's the pop singer Dana who raised sufficient support to run for the Irish presidency, largely as a result of winning the 1970 Eurovision Song Contest. But then Charles Haughey got into power by winning £3 million in a bet with a businessman that he could become Prime Minister if he had £3 million. The Eurovision winner system very nearly saw Tony Blair come second in the Labour leadership contest to Bucks Fizz, until somebody noticed that their song was called Making Your Mind Up, and you can't have Labour ministers doing that. 2 points to David. Tony, some music for you to listen to.
Men just aren't the same today, I hear every mother say. They just don't appreciate that you get tired. They're so hard to satisfy, you can tranquilize your mind or go running to the shelter of your mother's little helper to help you through the night, help to minimize your plight.
Mick Jagger's certainly showing his age, isn't he? Tony, how is new man proving no help to new mother?
Right, well, a brilliant survey that's been done saying that men that go along to the birth of their children are no help at all. They're sort of over 50% of them just get ill there, I think. They sort of feel faint or complain that their wife's making too much noise and giving them a headache. And the fact is, if they'd listened to their wife's complaint of a headache, they wouldn't be in that position in the first place. And that's it, I think. You know, you go along to these things if you are a new man. I think you can measure whether you're a new man in yards. This is my theory, anyway. If you're walking along the road and you see some gorgeous girl who you're very attracted to coming the other way, it's how far they get before you turn round to have a look at their bottom decides whether you're a new man or not. I'm actually a five-yarder myself. But I think it was... they haven't done a survey on this since... The government did a survey, I think, in 1993 called Changing Childbirth, which you would have thought would be the one area where the government couldn't really interfere in that process. But the Tories got stuck in there, didn't they? They, it's not really their domain. Because changing childbirth, really, is new labour.
Because there was another story this week about the government are going to send along experienced mums to help out first-time mums who are feeling a bit down and finding it difficult to cope, which I'm all in favour of. I think as long as the new dad gets a bit of support as well. And I think, you know, the experienced mum should go along to help the new mum deal with the baby, and experienced dads should go along to drag the father off down the pub.
Alan, who put the little C back into Christmas?
Oh, we know this one, sir.
Can I have a real question? And was that really the question?
No.
No, I want a clue, sir.
Andy's got it.
I don't care.
No, I don't care
what
Alan
Andy's got.
Deserves
a little C in a circle.
A little C in a circle. Mm. Back into Christmas. Copyright. Mm.
Yeah. Ah,
someone has copyrighted Christmas.
Yes.
Good heavens. Yes, I think you'll find, Simon, that someone has copyrighted Christmas. They believe there is money to be made of this.
It's not a commercial operation. It's not meant to be, anyway. It's the church that's going to reclaim Christmas from the sort of... from baby sham and all these other products they feel are associated with Christmas, and they feel the high street's taken over Christmas, and they feel that, as the definition of copyright is is governed by who put in the most to it creatively, they think that it belongs to God. And so they're...
So God's going to release all his own products for Christmas.
God's going to do the merchandise.
Special God champagne.
He's going to have God tea towels. He's
God
going to
nuts.
Do that whole thing. And Jesus will do a promotional tour.
Give one to Alan and one to Andy for that. It's the annual attempt by the Church of England to get people to church at Christmas. This year it takes the form of a poster campaign featuring the word Christmas with a little copyright sign by it. At the end of round two, the scores are... Andy and David 7, but Alan and Tony clinging to the lead with 8 points. Yeah. We start round three with a cutting from the Mail on Sunday.
Three senior British Airways cabin staff may be fired after an astonishing sex romp on a grand piano in a luxury hotel. The incident was reported to the duty manager, who then tipped off the airline. BA immediately sent a cabin crew performance manager to investigate.
Thanks to Bill Martin from Crawley for spotting that. Andy, who had a thought for your pennies?
Yeah, basically, we've run out of 1p coins because nobody has a use for a 1p coin. Nothing costs 1p anymore.
It's because we've been spending all these pennies down the back of sofas, apparently. I couldn't work that one out at all. I mean, unless people have got many worse habits than we have in our house.
Spending pennies down the back of sofas. Very much discouraged in our house.
It's an amnesty. 1p amnesty.
1p amnesty.
You take them in and they give you a sharp knife in return.
The Royal Mint have appealed to the public to help retrieve one penny pieces from wherever they might be. Pennies are essential for stores over the Christmas period, which is why they need them back in the middle of September. Prompted by this story, Greece has demanded repatriation of all drachma coins taken home by British tourists. But the government has said they'll have to wait, as we only empty the parking meters on Thursdays. David, here's a piece of music for you. How did lowered breeches breach the peace?
Yes, this is the sad tale of the magistrate, journalist and public relations consultant who got into an argument with a stable owner who started photographing her for some reason as she made her way around his stables complaining about it. It's a sort of quintessentially English tale, this, of village life. And so she said, well, if you're going to photograph me, then cop a load of this, at which point the 47-year-old woman lowered her breeches and showed her bottom to the man who was taking the photographs. As a result, Lord Irvine of Lerg has had her struck off the magistrate's list, but she said anyway she didn't have enough time because she was too busy doing public relations and stuff like that.
It's a bit hard, though, I think, because, I mean, it wasn't necessarily abusive what she was doing. I mean, maybe she thought that was her best side.
Magistrate Josie Lewis was dismissed from office after mooning at someone during an argument. Miss Lewis became embroiled in a row with stable owner Brian Woodfield when he began to photograph her with equipment he claims she hadn't paid for. Miss Lewis had thought that her defence was watertight, and it was only when Mr. Woodfield forwarded the photographs to the Lord Chancellor that the first crack appeared.
Oh dear.
Tony, which holy building deserves brotherly love?
Yes, I didn't realise there's actually a World Monument Fund, and they've decided to include this derelict former Franciscan monastery in Manchester in their top 100 list of ancient monuments. It's in this week at number 87, just ahead of Elizabeth Taylor. And because it's in this list, it's on a par with the Taj Mahal, apparently. Presumably they mean the Taj Mahal Tandoori in Didsbury, I suppose. But it's a Manchester building on a par with the Taj Mahal.
Yes, precisely. It's the former Franciscan monastery in Manchester that's been officially designated a world architectural treasure to rival the Taj Mahal. The comparison is very appropriate, as the Taj Mahal was built by highly skilled Indians, whereas most of Manchester was put up by cowboys. So 2 points there. And Alan, which list had patriots saying, sod that for a game of soldiers?
He's a very strange man. He's an American colonel with time on his hands, who does lists of things. He's done a list of the world's greatest 100 military heroes, and Saddam Hussein comes in at about 7, and Fidel Castro is there, a lot of extremely nasty butchers, and Churchill doesn't figure in this. And everyone has become extremely upset, because Churchill was a military leader, for younger listeners, and Americans. And that's about the top and bottom of it, I think, really.
This is a list of the 100 greatest military leaders in history, which controversially has George Washington at number 1, but excludes Churchill altogether. The list was compiled by an American Army officer, Michael Lanning. Or at least he's the one taking the credit, though many suspect he just turned up at the last minute when all the hard work had been done. And the scores at the end of round 3 are Andy and David 11, but Alan and Tony clinging to the lead with 12 points. Before we start the final round, here's an extract from Cruising French Waterways, which was sent in by Hugh McKnight.
Beyond Lock 22, woods give way to open cultivated fields. The ugly factory by Lock 24 pours effluent into the river and makes butter and cheese.
Andy, your piece of music. Andy, how might an old woolly bully be in for a mammoth surprise?
Something about cloning mammoths, wasn't it?
Yeah. This is about how they've asked some archaeologists, or whatever they are, to look under the tundra to find some mammoths, intact mammoths, so that they can... Somebody has to do this job. Extract the sperm from the 10,000-year-old dead mammoths and put them, kind of syringe them into elephant eggs in order to recreate Kenneth Clark.
I don't necessarily think they have to extract the sperm, do they? It's not a job I would relish.
Mm-hmm. It'd look odd in your passport, wouldn't it? Mammoth sperm collector.
It would make a very good picture, wouldn't it? Yeah.
You'd be a very careless collector if you managed to get it in your passport as well.
Well, that's what mammoths are like, isn't it?
Can I just ask, Dave, what's the objective of taking the mammoth sperm and putting it into elephants?
Elephants like it.
David, who found a sweet solution to an unmusical cacophony?
This is the tale of how Radio 3, the story of how Radio 3 was so... people were so annoyed by the sound of all these people rustling sweet wrappers during the proms and things like that, that they themselves have invented, under the tutelage of John Burt, Director General of the BBC, may he be praised forever, a rustle-free wrapper, which will then... Now, they're also going to do the same things for coughs. You're going to have rattle-free catarrh, which you can kind of put in your throat and it doesn't make a noise when you clear it and things like that. So Radio 3 is going to do that, and now they don't have the problem anymore.
Is it a problem, though?
Well, the news crews, we're grateful for any noise from the audience. Just an... No, they're still awake. Or indeed alive.
This is Radio 3's decision to dish out cough sweets in rustle-proof wrappers to concert-goers. It's a great boon for music fans who will no longer have to sit through a barrage of coughing before they discover they're listening to Radio 3. Now they'll realise a mistake within seconds and be able to retune to Classic FM straight away. On one famous occasion, a Radio 3 concert attracted just five old ladies, all of whom had terrible hacking coughs. In the end, the orchestra gave up and listeners had to settle for the Trout Quintet. Tony, what colour cars might drive you to despair?
Another ridiculous survey, I think, done by the RAC. I think they got loads of psychologists to go out and interview about 1,000 drivers, ask them what coloured car they'd got. And they've come up with this theory that the colour of your car indicates personality traits. If you drive a silver car, you're pompous. If you drive a blue car, you lack imagination, which is ridiculous. I drive a blue car. I can't imagine what's given them that theory. And if you drive a sort of pastel car or a beige car, or something, they reckon that you're more likely to be a victim of road rage and you get depressed quite a lot. That's their theory.
Why people say, who's that sad bastard in the beige metro?
But someone was telling me that the car... The colour of your car is important. Someone was telling me he reckoned they knew the workings of the police quite well. When they're bored, they've got this game, and they're on road patrol or whatever. They've got a game which is called Car Snooker. And they stop a car, a red car, and then that qualifies them to go on to another colour then. Then they stop, and they obviously are looking for a black car then, obviously. You get a big... But the brilliant thing about this is, if you are driving a beige car, it doesn't matter if you're a manic, depressive, and you're a victim of road rage, you're never going to be stopped by the police. What colour do you drive, Simon?
Well, navy blue, but it was the only one they had.
Was it?
Mm.
You didn't have the imagination to go to another store. This proves their point.
Alan, your question. Where might you have had a taste of Jurassic pork?
Jurassic pork? I think we're probably talking about a man called Bailey.
Yes.
Who had a store. I'm not quite sure where it was, but you could smell it from 38 miles away. He had shelves of things that were so old that it was before there were sell-by dates put on labels. This was his defence. There was a tin of peach halves that was 18 years old and some beef that was 12 years old. And it was just all very old stuff. I suppose that's the Jurassic pork thing, is it? I mean, you could open it and reconstitute a mammoth, I suppose, and be back in the Neolithic age before you knew it, certainly as far as your bowels were concerned. I think he was called Bailey.
In Malcolm Bailey's corner shop in Midsomer Norton, Avon is where inspectors discovered tins of food 12 years old or more. Bailey defended the product, saying his tinned apricots were fit for a king. Sadly for him, it proved to be George V. He had no way of knowing that the cans of food were illegal, as the sell-by dates were covered up by the old wartime utility mark. But before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, this is sent in by Mrs. Anna Sanders from Chobham, and it's just a terribly human story. A smoker spent £3,000 on cigarettes to get a free £150 television, only to be told the offer had been cancelled months earlier. Paul Johnson from Crawley smoked 24,000 cigarettes over 2 years to collect 1,200 tokens for the offer from Raffles. Mr. Johnson said, "The stress of all this means I'm now smoking two packs of cigarettes a day." What an idiot.
David.
This is from Newsweek. It's an advertisement placed by Tourinform, which is the tourist board from Hungary, extolling the virtues of the Hungarian plain, or Pucsta, as it's known. I'll try and give you the full flavour of it. The romantic Pucsta gives you the sensation of infinite freedom. You will discover a world close to nature, full of ancient customs, old tools, musical instruments, and gastronomic delights of herdsmen cooked in traditional cauldrons.
Tony.
Yeah, this has been sent in from the Bude and Stratton Journal Gazette. The headline is, "Licensee is sent for trial." Terence John Matthews, former licensee of the Tree Inn, Stratton, will face trial on July the 31st. He has been committed to Truro Crown Court for possessing a fireman.
Alan.
I have one from the Palmer's Green and Southgate Gazette, Simon. It says, a man has been arrested and charged with fraud after posing as an ex-member of Bomber Command and going from door to door in East Barnet with an RAF Benevolent Fund collecting box. John Sutcliffe, 71, was apprehended after eagle-eyed Cat Hill resident Robert Weeks became suspicious and phoned the police. The man had a chestful of medals, Mr. Weeks told our reporter, but when I looked a bit closer, I noticed that one of them was the Iron Cross.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores now. Andy and David have 15 points, but Alan and Tony have just held on to the final whistle with 16 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the South Africa Sunday Independent.
According to Dr. Menzeleli Msauli at East London's Cecilia Makiwane Hospital, it is women who are at the forefront of the circumcision movement and who are insisting that boys be given medical examinations before they go into the bush.
That's all for this week. Until the next time, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Curran, Andy Hamilton, Tony Hawkes and David Aronovich. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft. The producer was John Rolfe.